Get road trip ready with a service checkup at your local Chevy dealer. They can save you time and money and get the job done right the first time, worry-free. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for current service specials or to schedule a test drive.
All right, here we go. Everything okay in the booth? Yeah? Levels are set? Nerves are where they should be, right? All right, let's do this. Okay, Jim, talent is ready. That's always the case. All right. All right, Jim, before we get started, don't forget your three S's. Star, smile, strong. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. A new episode posted every Monday. And don't forget my landing page. You just go to WGNplus.com. Go to the entertainment section. And you will see a prompt for Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Press on that, and lo and behold, a treasure trove of podcasting delight. It's like a buried treasure. And as you bring up to the surface this treasure chest of podtastic perfection, you will find that you have 117 of these gold coins just for your entertainment pleasure. Because this is episode number 118 of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Thank you so much for clicking on or whatever it is you do to find us. Clicking, scrolling, swiping, pushing, I don't even know. There are so many devices and so many ways that we are connected these days that whatever gesture or movement you use, I thank you for that. And I hope that you enjoy the podcasts. I certainly enjoy doing them. And talking about being connected, that's what we're talking about today on the good old podcast. I saw this article. If you've listened to me with any regularity through the years, podcasting, over the air, you name it, you will know that I have a flip phone. I have a good old-fashioned flip phone, a Samsung flip phone. And I don't like to brag, but it has bowling and Tetris also on it. And I found out a few weeks ago for the first time, even a flashlight. There's too much on there for me. Yes, it has a camera. I've even taken photos with it. Yes, I even have wallpaper on my little screen. Yeah, wallpaper. I have a wallpaper function on my flip phone. So you're sitting there and you're going, now, wait a minute, I bought, you know, this iPhone for several hundred dollars at this point. Some of them are even as much as $1,000. And Jim, you paid probably, I'll tell you what I paid. I paid nothing. When I got my new carrier, they gave me the phone for free. They probably have a stack of them. They don't know what to do with them. They sent it to me for free. So not only did I not even pay a lot for it, I didn't pay anything for it. And look at the capabilities that phone has for me. It rings. It vibrates. It beeps. I just found this out maybe a year ago. I've used it sometimes, especially on vacation. I have an alarm that will go off with several different sounds. I'm telling you, gang, flip phones are where it's at. So let's just run down what I've got here on my little flip phone. First of all, it's a flip phone. It is very convenient. It flips and folds. It is small. It is lightweight. It is not huge. It has a screen with wallpaper, of course. You say, what's on an Elton Jim's flip phone wallpaper? When I open up the little screen, what's on there? Well, what do you think is on there? It's not a picture of me, no. It is not a picture of my wife, Elton Jamie, no. It is not a picture of Grimsby the cat. It is not a picture of a sunset. It is not a picture of whatever. Naturally, it's an Elton Jim flip phone. This way, if I lose it, you'll know exactly whose it is. It's a picture of Elton, of course. A close-up of the from the Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy album of the illustration of Elton John as Captain Fantastic, drawn by Alan Aldridge. So just pick up the go online, Google, if you don't know what the cover looks like. Google Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy, and you'll see the image. And I even cropped the photo. Oh, so that I could have a close-up of just the Elton John figure's face as Captain Fantastic. So there it is. But I open up my flip phone. As I said, I can play games. I can play bowling and Tetris. Thank you very much. There's a flashlight. There's a camera. There's an alarm. I can text. There are different sounds that I can program for my ringtones. What more do I need? I don't think I need anything. Because after all, it is a flip phone. And I use it for communicating, which is what the device is all about. I don't use it for anything else. I don't use it for games, even though, as I said, I could. I've got bowling and Tetris. Thank you very much. I use it as a communications device. I don't use it to entertain myself. I don't use it to watch television. I don't use it to make movies. I don't use it to call a cab or an Uber. Because, of course, I could, but I don't even have internet service as part of my service on it. I'll text somebody. I don't even need the expense. I'm always very open with you. I won't tell you the exact amount, but I'll tell you that my phone bill for my phone is under $80 a month. That's what it is. I would think that most people's is a lot higher than that, with all the texting packages and all the internet packages. Under $80. At least I would hope that's a good price for what I'm using it for. I use it every so often, but I use it mainly if I do get a text, obviously, because most of the rest of the world is texting furiously. And so I have been dragged into the texting world. Believe me, it is not it's not a place that I enjoy all that much because of the fact, if you know about a flip phone, I don't have a keyboard like most people on the iPhone do. All my letters when I text are on the numbers, and I have to hit each number to find my letter. It takes me a long time. So that's why a lot of my texts, I'm usually very verbose in real life. I talk a lot, right? That's why I do this. I figured when I was a little kid, I always got in trouble for talking, so I figured I might as well try to find a way to make a living at it. And but in my texting world, I'm even kind of long-winded probably in my emailing world, because I like to give a full account. I like to give a full description. So often, how many times do you have to go back and forth with an email because people are just writing in the moment? They're not giving you all the information. I like to give an email that when your response back to me is, thanks, okay. If I get that back from someone, I know that I've given them a very comprehensive email. If I'm talking about a specific thing that needs some action items, here's the situation, here's what we're doing, here's what's attached, here's the solution, and here's when we're going to do it. If I've done my good job of doing that in my email, writing an email, the next response back should be thanks. But in my texting world, because it is such a pain in the A, blank, S, 1, 2, 3, 4, S, 2, 3, 4, to hit the A and find the S and all that stuff, I'm very brief. There I will do yes, no. It kills me. Oh, it kills me to text with just one or two letters or one or two words because I want to be more complete and comprehensive, but it's such a pain in the A, dot, dot, and then I have to go and find wherever the S is and, you know, on whatever number that is and find the S at the, oh. It is a pain in the ASS, and so I don't text long. I will just say yes, okay, sometimes. I will even, if there's something like okay, you know, I don't have any emojis on my phone, and I don't have any, like, even little thumbs up type of things. So I will just use exclamation points. If, like, yay, yes, okay. And it kills me to say this, and that's how it started. But, you know, the whole slang of LOL and using numbers for, you know, two or four was basically born out of the initial texting on a flip phone because it was more time-consuming and because all the letters were on each number and you had to go through the different letters to find the one you wanted, it took longer. Now, obviously, for those almost everybody in the world except me who has an iPhone, you just have your little keyboard and I see those people's fingers and their thumbs just flying. I couldn't do that that fast even if I had an iPhone because I really do have big thumbs. It'd be a mess anyway. But I actually do use a slang sometime, you know, two, and it kills me. Sometimes my emails or my texts look like a title of a Prince song. And I hated when Prince used to do that. I will die for you. Ugh. He used to do that all the time. But he did that long before the texting world. He was ahead of his game. But yeah, that drives me crazy when I have to text and I actually use some of the slang because it becomes such a chore to write a long sentence and it takes long. So, yes! Exclamation point. No! Okay! That's pretty much what you get back from me. But so, as I was saying, I certainly have more than enough for what I need it for. And yes, I do use social media. As you know, this is on social media, right? This podcast. So this is social media. I am engaged in social media. I have a Facebook page. I even signed up for Instagram. I have not used it, but I have signed up for it just so I could follow some people. Because now Instagram seems to be the one that everybody is jumping on. Now that Facebook is viewed as passe by most of the younger people. So now I go there because that's a lot of stuff is happening and posted. But in terms of social media, yes, I've always been into email. I think email is a great thing. No doubt about that. And yeah, I have a Facebook page. It's Jim Turano, T-U-R-A-N-O. I hope you'll visit that. Not only do I post a link to my podcast on there every week, several times a week, just to remind you, but I also do another feature on there called Elton Jim's Jam-Packed iPod feature. Every day for the last 3.5, well, just a little over 3 years now, started in June of 2015, I post a song from my iPod. I told you I have 24,000 songs on my iPod. And I literally go on that iPod every day and check the albums and check the artists and check the compilations and my playlists for a cool song that you may never have heard or you may have heard and forgotten about or just one of my favorite cool songs that I want to share with you. Maybe you've heard it a million times, but it's one that is one of my favorites. And I do try to find obscure, you know, kind of songs that you maybe haven't heard in a long time. And even some artists, and even if it's by a major artist, I'll try to find one that you maybe have never heard before. So it's not just a hit parade here of songs you've heard a million times and can hear on the radio. But I got the idea because one day I was sitting in my yard and I was playing my iPod and all these cool songs were coming on just on shuffle. And I was like, wow, I haven't heard that one in a long time. And, oh, I forgot about this one. And I'm like, oh, geez, I bet you no one even knows what a great song this is. And that where the idea came from. And it's been kind of cool. A lot of people check that on a daily basis and say, oh, gosh, I remember this song. Wow, I never heard that one. Thanks for letting me know. So go on my Facebook page every day and you'll see a new song from Elton Jim's jam-packed iPod feature. So, yeah, I'm into social media. But no, I'm not into Snapchat. I do sometimes, you know, post pictures from vacations and things like that. And sometimes when there's a big news story, I will do something like that. But I use it mostly as a marketing kind of tool just for whatever professional projects I have going on, whether I'm doing something, you know, whoops, in a play or something like that. Or just something interesting. But yeah, I'm into social media, but I'm not addicted to it. And as I've said, I think there's a reason for that, because all I see are people's heads down. And I can't wait to see the osteoporosis that's going to be occurring in this generation in the next 20 or 30 years when everybody's got a curved spine. My posture is quite upright. So I bring this up. Because for me, social media is not an addiction. It does not consume my life. I do not have my phone with me at all times. In fact, many times I miss some calls from people because my phone on a daily basis is either in the kitchen or in a drawer that I have in the kitchen. Sometimes I forget it in my car. If I'm driving in my car and I leave it in my car, and I'll leave it there overnight. Don't even know I have it, or I don't have it. You know, I mean, I guess maybe it says something to the extent of my popularity or how much people want to talk or get in touch with me, too. I guess I could look at it that way, but I prefer not to. All I know is my phone isn't ringing all that much and my text isn't beeping all that much, and I use it when I need to, as needed, in emergency. Whatever it may be. But yes, I do know, and I've talked about this many times, how the cell phone is becoming a very addictive thing. And I've been screaming this in the forest for many, many years, telling you this. And everybody thinks that I'm either old-fashioned or I'm out of touch or I'm just being a contrarian or a curmudgeon. No. Everybody's life is different, and I've tailored the phone to my life and my likings. I would rather not have my head into a phone. I'd rather talk to somebody if I'm there with them at a table. If I'm somewhere out and I'm by myself, I'd rather observe and look around and appreciate my surroundings rather than looking at something virtual about something else and finding out, has anybody called me? Has anybody texted me? Am I important? I don't know. I'm just, that's not my big thing. But it is a big problem, and I've talked about this on and off. A few weeks ago, I talked about how Apple is beginning to actually come up with a software that may help people wean them off. They certainly don't want people to stop using their phone because that would go against their business model. So I don't know. They're trying to be good citizens, but at the same time, they're telling you, you know, that we may create a software to help you wean off, you know, being addicted. At the same time, every 6 months they come out with a new upgrade to their phone to entice you to use it more. So I don't know how pure Apple or Google may be in their efforts to wean people off, but at least they're trying to make some kind of a cosmetic showing, the optics, but I don't know how much they really are, because at the end of the day, that affects their bottom line, and they want you to buy as many phones, as many apps, as many upgrades as you can and as you are willing to do, as many times as you are willing to do. But I saw this story that was interesting, and it's called, and I think we were seeing this more and more. As I said, it doesn't really, I read this story more because of how it doesn't affect me. But I thought I would pass this along because I know most of you are probably, you know, chin deep in the social media world and on your phone all the time, and maybe this will help you. And I get to do a nice I told you so which I always enjoy doing, on this topic as well. It's called something called the 30-Day Challenge. And I guess as a way to at least bring some semblance of normalcy to your life, if you are consistently and continually addicted to having that phone in your hand and checking and swiping and scrolling and texting and everything you do on there. They have 5 points here of the 30-day challenge. For 30 days, they just say, you know, for 30 days, try this. They're not telling you to stop social media. In today's world, that's almost impossible. It has completely overtaken our society, our culture, our business world. So it's impossible for us, any of us, to be completely off the grid unless you that's your point and you're going to go out and live in a barn somewhere out in the forest. But, you know, there's are certain advantages, certainly, of being on the grid. Once again, I'm not from the 1820s here. But there's also something to be said for not being connected to it 24 hours a day and needing it almost like an obsession. So there's something called the 30-day challenge, which I thought was interesting, might help those of you out there that might feel like, boy, can I possibly do something to break away? It's kind of like the Atkins diet, I guess, for those who are addicted not to carbs or are addicted to high fat foods. Oh no, well, the Atkins is no carbs. That's right. So if you're addicted to carbs, the Atkins diet, you know, is one of these. So this is like a 5-step program for you instead of the 12-step program for alcoholics. Here's a 5-step program, the 30-day challenge. Are you man or woman enough to take the 30-day challenge of just seeing if you can work smarter and be a little more efficient with your time and enjoy your free time more? And the point of this really is to create a little more free time, create a little more time for personal interaction and interpersonal interaction, talking not only to others but maybe to yourself, just having a little semblance of balance. And so these are interesting. It's for both the worker as well as the individual person. I mean, we're all workers, right? We all have a boss. We all have a deadline somewhere in our lives, right? And so this is. So here's the 5 steps, and see if these are something that you might be able to incorporate into your life if you'd like to slow down a bit. And at the same time, or see if, oh, you know what? I don't really need that because I do that already. I don't know about you, but when I see lists, I read them first to see what I already do. And I go, okay, fine. If there's a potential problem, I'm looking at this list that identifies 5 or 10 different things. It's like, well, you know what? I already do 7 or 8 of those. So I guess I don't really have that problem. So we always try to look at the lists. And before we delve into them, maybe use them, I try to apply the points on a list or these some kind of how-to things to see what I am doing 7 of those 10. So maybe I do need to look at this. But this one, I was not surprised. There's actually 6 points on this one. But it's called the 30-day challenge. So can you do this? Number one, stop working at 5 o'clock p.m. each day, no matter what. I would think that's a difficult thing to do in today's world. I mean, you know, my world of the last several years is much different. But when I did, work a full 9 to 5, my day was never 9 to 5. My day was probably 8:30 to about 7:30 or 7. And then especially, it was a type of business that I was in. I mean, when I was on the radio, that was a whole different story. We were almost on, I mean, you had your time slot, but we just didn't stroll in at, 3 p.m. and get done at 7. I mean, we were working from the early morning in terms of getting preparation, looking for things to talk about, talking about things, doing little, getting parts ready. You know, there's a lot of preparation that goes into a radio show. Most people just think you walk in at your time and you do 3 or 4 hours and you're done, but that's not what it is. And when I was in the world of public relations, my goodness, as I said, that was there was no such thing really as a clock, because you were you were at the demands of either a client. When I worked for a public relations firm and had many clients that needed different services, and if there was some kind of a crisis, there was no such thing as 9 to 5. Or when I worked internally in the public relations firm for a couple of companies, the same thing. I mean, if they need you, they need you. If something happened, or you got something done by tomorrow, you got to get something done by tomorrow. So that's not easy. But in today's world, I think, depending on the demands of your job, it's one thing if the demands of your job, and you know going in, are that you sort of need to be on call most of the time. But in a kind of regular job, I think what's not fair is a lot of employers today have been taking advantage of people because of our connectivity, that they expect you to be working 24 hours a day and being always on call and always checking your email and always checking your texts and always having your phone. I don't think that's fair. You know, I mean, back in the old days, you got done at 5 o'clock. So if you can do that, I think that's a good idea just for your own, forget about social media. I think that's good for your own health and, once again, your own balance of life. See if you can stop working at 5 o'clock. At least make an effort of it. When your phone battery dies, you're done. Interesting. When your phone battery dies, you are done with your phone for that day. Whether it's work, whether it's texting, whether it's, you know, frivolous, just surfing on the internet. When your phone battery dies, you're done. That lets you know you've been using that thing for quite a while. We're always looking to recharge our batteries. This says, hey, when the phone dies, that's your signal. That's kind of your artificial signal. Not a bad idea. Although for me, once again, that's crazy because I'm so anal that when I look on my phone, even though I don't use my phone all that much, I've just said that, I do try to always keep it fully charged in case I do need it, because I don't always carry my charger with me, because I don't use the phone all that much, so I don't have my charger with me. So I always have this, whenever I see one bar of the battery is down, I will charge my phone. Once again, very anal. I am Felix Unger in many ways. And Google Felix Unger if you don't know what that means. But yeah, that's a good idea. When your battery dies, you're done. This is another thing. Configure your router to disable the internet at 5 p.m. each workday. Wow. Okay, that's really addiction. When you have to force yourself going into your router and shutting off the internet. Wow, I think that's a little drastic. If you can't do that on your own, yeah, then you do need some more professional help. I think that one, is a little difficult. Block yourself before you are even able to cheat on the first two goals, it says. Wow. I guess that's if you're going to equate it to a diet, you know, don't bring that food in the house and you won't have the temptation, right? I think that one's a little crazy, because there are times when you need to check your email. Somebody may be sending you an important message that has nothing to do with work. That might be something about your family member or something like that. Now, I wish they would call. But a lot of times people just assume everybody's phone is on. Oh, you didn't get my text last night? No. Why didn't you call me? If the phone rings, I will pick it up. No email on the weekends. That might be tough for some people. I know that, as I said, I go on my Facebook and I do post something on the weekends as well. Like I said, this little feature or whatever. But I do notice that my email traffic is much, much slower on the weekends. And I don't really check my email all that much on the weekends. I don't think a lot of, especially in the summer. I think in the winter, more people are on the phone, especially here in the Chicago area, because you're just hibernating. And so you're probably more apt to use your computer. But I noticed in the summertime, the last four or several months, on the weekends, very, very low email traffic. I check it, but I don't get obsessed with it. Once again, these are for people that really are obsessed, that maybe you need to go to some of these extremes. No email on the weekends. Number five here, tell 10 people that you are doing the challenge. That may help. Say, look, for the next 30 days, I'm not going to be checking emails on the weekends, and I'm not going to be using my computer to, you know, or my phone or anything after 5 o'clock. So don't try to get in touch with me unless it's a major, major emergency. But I don't need any frivolous stuff. I'm trying to wean myself off. That's helpful. You know, if you're trying this 30-day challenge to sort of, you know, get some of your life back, that's something that is helpful. Let other people know you're doing it. So, once again, the temptation isn't there. The phone doesn't ring on the weekends. Your email inbox isn't full. So maybe people might just be bored as well. Oh, I'll send you an email. Well, maybe if you tell them, they'll help you through that by not, you know, filling up your box, your email box or things like that on the weekend. And it says, pause your social media accounts. We just keep checking them. Just no posts, no tweets, no nothing. Put the phone down. Put it in a drawer on Friday night at 5 o'clock and see if you can leave it there until Monday morning. See if you can. I've done it. I know it's possible, folks. You don't need a flip phone to do this. And hopefully you're not addicted to it. But, you know, as I said, many times we find ourselves just really... I see people, as I said, I'm rehearsing for a play right now, and it's amazing, too. I mean, there's a cast of about 15 or 16 people, and we have rehearsal, and everybody's phone is off while we're rehearsing. But once we take a 10-minute break, the first thing, 98% of everybody, they just go right to their phones. What could have been happened in an hour? What could have happened in an hour? I don't open my phone because I know that nobody called me or texted me or anything. Now, once again, I have a very, you know, kind of non-dramatic, you know, kind of streamlined life. I understand. I don't have kids. My parents have passed away. You know, my friends know that I'm not a big, this point of telling, my friends know I'm not a big texter. I'm not a big... So they don't bother unless, you know, there's something interesting enough, whatever. You know, so it's my wife. If I get a phone call or a text from my wife, I know something might be up that is serious. So I understand. Maybe I am really not the one that, you know, is a good example for this to say, well, this is what I do. But I'll tell you, all those six, I would have no problems doing that. But yeah, I understand. It's not easy sometimes. But it's just amazing how it's become, I don't even think people know they're doing it. That's what has to be broken. You don't need to just be the first reaction. It's like there's this trembling that people just need. Oh my God, I haven't touched my phone in a half hour. I haven't touched my phone in an hour. You know, that can be a problem. And as I said, I think you're not smelling the roses. I enjoy, if I go to an airport and I'm sitting in the terminal, I'm looking around, I'm watching people, I'm noticing things, I'm reading a newspaper, yeah. Reading a newspaper. Something tangible. I'm talking to somebody, interpersonal relationships, or I'm just noticing people. You know, I'm informing myself through actual experience, not virtual experience. Yeah, I'll go on the internet and look at news and find. As I said, I'm not completely cut off, but I don't need it 24 hours a day. And I don't think you do either, if you're in that situation, really sit down and be honest with yourself. If you find that these six challenges for the 30-day challenge to get off social media and work your day until 5 o'clock and enjoy your life, enjoy the people in your family or your friends, live life with your eyes ahead, forward, looking to the future, not down, you'd be surprised. But I would maybe feel good, as I said about these lists. What makes me feel good is I looked at the 30-day challenge of sort of breaking your obsession with your iPhone or with your emails or your texting or your apps or any kind of, you know, social media. And I saw the 30-day challenge and I realized that I live the 30-day challenge 365 days. And welcome back to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic here at WGNplus.com. And now we go to the Pop Culture Club with Emily Arminetti. Hello, Emily.
Hey, Jim.
How you doing? How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Very good. So, here we are, and we are in the midst of what I think is some very interesting pop culture news, which I believe that we discussed several months ago. And I don't know if anybody at the Academy Awards of Arts and Sciences, the Oscars, their governing body, is listening to this podcast.
Yeah, but I mean, obviously.
Well, of course. But there were some major changes announced this past week that will be going into effect for the upcoming Oscars. And it was practically word for word of what we discussed several months ago after the last Oscars were on. And the show was so long. The show was so boring. The show was so just unfocused, and the show was so anticlimactic.
Well, and, you know, the ratings were hit an all-time low.
Yeah.
But so when we talked about it, I think we talked about how if you look year on year, I mean, it was like, you know, some years they go up, some years they go down, but, like, this was, like, a massive dive.
Yeah.
You know, they have, like, half the number of viewers that they have had in recent years. Although they still get, like, you know, somewhere around like 25 million viewers, which for a normal show would be like massive ratings.
Yeah, but
yeah, there's a different expectation. Yeah, this is like a TV event, right?
Yeah, this is, I mean, don't forget, I mean, you know, the World Cup, which is ridiculous in terms of the worldwide. I mean, that got a billion people. But, you know,
sure.
as a normal kind of barometer for events, like you're saying, where there are these, you know, finales of a very popular show, or a Super Bowl, or, you know, some kind of one-time event. You know, it is based on kind of a 50 million, like the Super Bowl, I think, routinely gets in near the hundreds of millions of people. And the Academy Awards, in its heyday, certainly when there was a time when there was only three networks and there wasn't a lot to watch, the Academy Awards was a Super Bowl-like event in terms of television ratings and television viewing. It may be that for people that like movies still in terms of their interest, but in terms from a monetary kind of, you know, event, we always hear about how much the commercials cost on the Super Bowl. And that's the way the Academy Awards were.
Yes. I mean, I want to say when we were going through this back when the last award show aired, I want to say that there were years back in the 90s where they had double the amount of viewers that they had this past year.
Well, think about it. I mean, you know, I think they said the last year's came in at 25, which was the lowest, I think, in history.
Yeah.
And so now think about this. They were touting and going crazy about Roseanne's, you know, the original, you know, the reboot of Roseanne on ABC, garnering 18 or 19 million people.
Right.
And so that's just a regular TV show. Now, I'm not, casting aside another 7 million people that are the difference between that. But my point is that Roseanne, yeah, it was the first time it had been on in, 10 or 15 years. It was a big event. But for it to be that close to something like the Academy Awards, which really is supposed to be a once-a-year, must-see, have-to-watch event, that really shows how far the Academy Awards have fallen down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But so we were talking about this at length, about ways that they can, make the show. And I said at that time, I said, you know what? You have to just make this a three-hour show. It has to be 3 hours. 3.5, 4, 4.5, 4:15 is ridiculous. You cannot show all of these awards. I know it's your big night, but this is an entertainment show as opposed to an award show. It is on television. And many
I know. But see, this is, but part of me is like, okay, I feel like I have to advocate for, like, whatever. All of the big stars, they get their moment. They get their moment all the time. Like, their moment never ends. They're always on TV. They're always getting awards. They're this and that. Nicole Kidman, fine. But when you're like Joe Schmo, who like finally sold the screenplay, yeah, and then
guess what your name is? Guess what's your what was the name? What was the name you just gave that person?
Right, Joe Schmo.
Joe.
But I just
Schmo.
Feel like, can't we just give Joe Schmo his moment in the sun? So, like, as you're saying, you said they should shorten the ceremony to 3 hours. Turns out, so they're rolling out some changes, right?
And
there are
a few
changes they're making.
And what's the number that they've come up with?
3 hours.
3 hours.
A firm
3 hours. 3 hours. Thank you very much.
But, and I, of course, like, my immediate reaction was like, classic Oscars move, because it's like, let's not waste time honoring the nominees of the award during the actual award show, because who would do that during an award show? Because you know what they're going to do is the way that they're planning to cut down the ceremony is by presenting some of the categories during the commercials.
Right.
And this is not going to be, Nicole Kidman's not going to be accepting her award during the commercials, right? This is going to be Joe Schmo.
No, it's going to be sound. But, it's going to be sound editing.
Sure.
Sound. I mean, there's like five different sound things that I dare you to tell me what the difference is.
But I feel like, and I know what you're saying, they need to entertain people. This needs to be like a showcase. There has to be some element of variety show to it to get people watching. But I feel like there's still a lot of faff that they could cut out without having to cut out people who are actually getting awards.
I agree with you.
All those set pieces. Like, I'm okay with, like, the nominees for Best Song being performed live, because that makes sense, But, like, the selfies stunt and the pizza deliveries and the Jimmy Kimmel, surprising a theater audience with the theater snacks and the hot dog cannon,
I completely agree with you. However,
that stuff all takes up a ton of time.
Yes, and I agree with you. However, once again, believe me, there was a time I think that I would have been staunchly in your camp. The only thing where I've changed is that sadly, and I'm sad to say this, but what we have seen is, and I'm just being realistic here, because part of me, I completely agree with everything you say. Hey, this is a time for these other people, as you have called them, the Joe Schmoes.
Well, I didn't mean to make it sound like that.
I want to celebrate the Joe Schmoes. No, I know. No, you are an every woman.
Right.
You're for the little guy. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And I used to be that way too. No, but the thing is that, sadly, I'm just being a realist here. We are in a world now where we have and I'm not proud of it, but this is the reality, and there are these realities that have to be faced. Good or bad, as I've been on my soapbox screaming in the forest, we are now we have zero attention span. This generation, our culture, we only like what we like. We don't have time for what doesn't interest us. It's true. The biggest, I swear, if they did, I would love to have somebody do a some kind of a, you know, a grab on everybody's you know, texting or email, and I would love to just see how many times in a day somebody sends a message to one of their friends that says, "I'm bored."
Yeah.
We don't want to be bored. There's a million things in the world, and yet we are still bored because it doesn't appeal to us. And so I think ABC that run, you know, that telecast the Oscars are paying probably a good buck for this. And they're seeing not only the luster of the event not being, you know, not being maintained in terms of it being this must-see event, but they're also spending a lot of money and going, hey, gang, you know, $25 million is fine, but it ain't 50 in terms of how much we can pay for advertising.
Yes.
The budgets. Now, I agree with you. You know, there and before the set pieces, you know, before they used to have all these ridiculous, you know, these talk show hosts, that's their big thing. If you remember, the big complaint was, remember the dance sequences?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Then that's what I mean. Like that, if it's not something that is directly related to an award, I'm not into that.
Right,
I don't
but there's always been a sense, once it got to television, that it, and you used the exact description earlier. You said it's like, it needs to be like a variety show.
Yeah.
And that was the way that when it became a big event, when they were first producing this, they were saying that we've got to keep this interesting because just giving out awards with the people's names is boring. So we've got to do dance sequences. That's where they went first. And now they've gone to comedy as our society has moved away from, you know, being, you know, big dance-oriented types of things and more comedy-oriented. But the thing is that they're looking for filler to keep the show entertaining. And that's where I think the balance has always been of, is it an award show? Or is it an entertainment show? And I think what's just happened now is that for many years, I think a lot of people in the Academy were of your viewpoint that this should be an award show. We're giving people a chance, especially a lot of those people behind the scenes, to have their day in the sun and to get their 5 minutes of fame and their 5 minutes of in the spotlight. But at the same time, we're in a society now that sadly isn't something that we want to reward. We just want to be, we want to see our stars, and we want to see what interests us. And we don't care about sound editing or all these other kinds of, you know, of awards. And sadly, they are going to go away. They still will be given out. And as
just
you saw,
it won't be televised.
Yeah, and if you see, the Tonys are doing the same thing. A lot of times, you know, during the commercial break, I think this year in the Tony Awards, which gives out the awards for, you know, for Broadway, they may have even done that same kind of split screen thing that they've been doing now on sporting events sometimes, like especially on golf where the play doesn't stop. At times during commercial breaks, they will have a split screen.
Really?
Yeah, and they will continue to show you the event on one side of the screen, and they will show you a commercial on the other.
Huh, that's weird.
Yeah, now I'm sure that gets they charge less for that.
Because, right, yeah.
You know, it's not on the full screen, so everybody's attention is not there. But in a continual kind of thing, they don't want to lose the immediacy in case something big happens. They don't want people to turn the station. So right. They will actually show the actual event as well as the commercial at the same time. So I don't know if they're going to do that. I know that the Tonys would come back from a commercial and quickly show the person and the award, you know, sort of as the bumper coming back. So yeah, that's the first one. They are going to make it 3 hours. If you've noticed, as I said many times, the Grammys have certainly subscribed to that, and the Grammys are now one of the more popular award shows in terms of ratings because it's they bit the bullet, and that's what you have to do on this. If you're in
now, and it'll be interesting to see though. Do we think that shortening it to 3 hours is going to boost the viewership?
Well, I'll tell you, I think what's going to happen, and this is part two, and this is the most scary part of this, of the new changes. Now, they also are going now one of the other changes, they're going to, so the show's going to be 3 hours.
Yeah.
It's going to be streamlined, major, they're going to choose major categories,
mm-hmm.
and you know, do most of that. Okay, fine. I understand that, because, you know, especially to be up at 11:30 or 11:45 or 12:15, and you're waiting, that's the one you've been watching the whole night for.
Right, right.
And that's the one that you don't see happen. And how frustrating is it? What, all you see, like, in the coverage in the newspapers the next day is Best Supporting Actress.
Right.
Because that was the one that happened earliest.
Right.
So they,
because they need to make their deadline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it is a good idea from a viewer standpoint. I certainly, you know, from a purist standpoint, and that's where I fall, how I really feel about it, but I'm looking at the realities of what, of where we're at today, and I see why they did it, and I think it was, it's a good idea. Whether it's gonna, whether that's gonna boost the ratings, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is, even for people like us who, this is like, I mean, the Oscars is like my Super Bowl.
Right,
but when it's getting into like 5 hours.
Yeah, that's just ridiculous.
That feels like a big time commitment.
Yeah, well.
Even for me, you know.
And you're tired. How many times do you fall asleep? Yeah. And hopefully you wake up.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
And oh, so, there they are. You know, I mean, think about it. I mean, I think it was almost luck a couple of years ago, which, you know, if there was ever a time to be up at, you know, 11:45 or 12 o'clock after starting at 8 or 7 was when, you know, the wrong envelope was given out.
Oh,
I mean, what if you slept? Did you sleep through that, or were you watching?
No, I saw that.
Yeah.
I saw it.
But I mean, okay, so that was something that, you know, thank God I saw that. You know, that was a piece of history there. So they're going to make it 3 hours. We will see. I'm sure they're going to continue to tinker with it, but they've at least made a decision. I think this definitely came from ABC to say, look, this 5 hour stuff, 4.5 hour stuff, it can't work. You've got to start at 7 and be done by 10, or 7:30 and done by 10:30. So I think it'll be interesting to see how the show is streamlined, what awards they choose. If, to your point, which I think is a valid point, if they decide to cut down on a lot of those set pieces with giving away the hot dogs and all that BS, that, you know, and all the selfies that, unfortunately.
Although I have to say, I don't know if it was last year or the year before, because Kimmel pulled both of these stunts on different years. There was one year where he took some celebrities over to a theater across the street.
Right.
And surprised these people who thought they were seeing A Wrinkle in Time. I think that was last year. Then it was like the year before that. He surprised a Hollywood tour bus.
Right, and brought those people
in.
Right.
And even though, really, that stuff burns up a lot of time, and in the end, it's not even that interesting, I have to say, the look on Nicole Kidman's face when she realized she was going to have to shake hands with, like, the unwashed masses.
Literally.
That was kind of worth all the time that that little set piece
literally
burned
the,
up.
Literally, yeah. The unwashed masses.
Yes. I mean, she was like, oh no, yeah. I have a choice to make here. There are 25 million people watching.
Right, exactly. That's a time when they hope that there's not that many people watching.
Right.
But mean, you know, that's the problem. I mean, you know, about a few years ago, there's always been those moments, I think, when Ellen DeGeneres did the big world's biggest selfie picture.
Oh, the selfie, yeah.
That's what started all that. That's because that went viral. And then once that happened, it's like, okay, you know darn well when they sat in the meetings about, okay, the production meeting, what are we going to do? The first question was, okay, what's going to be this year's, you know, selfie thing?
Yes.
And now that has been a tradition. Now, as you said, that eats a lot of time, and it has nothing to do with the awards. It's pure entertainment value. It's a chance for Jimmy Kimmel, especially, to show what he does so that he can promote his own show, and that's why he's hosting it, because he's on ABC. Let's not pretend.
Right.
Because, you know, the funny thing is, you know, 40-some, 50-some years ago, Johnny Carson, who basically, you know, ran NBC for 30-some years with The Tonight Show, he was the host many times.
Right. Well, when I
had nothing to do with ABC. Bob Hope was always on NBC, and he hosted. It had nothing to do with cross-promotion. It was just, who's the best person to do it?
Well, when I was growing up, it was like people like Billy Crystal did it a handful of times. Whoopi Goldberg did it.
Right.
It was actually, there was like a run of like really famous comedians.
Well, like I said, but now you're
who are hosting.
You're seeing that you know, and it's no surprise that Colbert is hosting the Grammys, or that and when Conan was on NBC, he hosted the Emmys. You know, and when they independent, whatever station is on, usually their big late night talent is the host. Now that's just the way it's become.
Okay, well, this is an interesting point. This is not one of the changes they've rolled out, but perhaps they are missing a trick. Maybe they need to get away from the whole keeping it in network, trying to promote their network stars.
Oh, I think
and
they
maybe
do.
They need to branch back out and have, and you know, maybe it's not Billy Crystal, right. But you know, maybe it is, you know, someone else, someone who's got broader appeal or, you know, is not necessarily attached to the network in any way.
Oh, I think that is, once again, you're making a great point. The problem is that you're looking at it from a purist standpoint and not from a capitalist standpoint.
Yeah.
And sadly, that is where everything is moving now, is ABC and all these other people are like, we have a 3-hour event here that we're going to be promoting a lot, and so why should we waste it by not helping to promote ourselves? That's where we're at right now, sadly, because the networks are in such dire straits because they are battling with so many other options.
Right,
so
yeah.
That's where that's coming from. That's coming from the fact that their viewership is so low that whenever they have a chance to get a lot of eyes on something, that they have a good idea that people are going to watch, they promote their own because the people aren't watching CBS, maybe aside from that 2 or 3 times a year.
Don't get me wrong. I like Kimmel, but not everybody. I know you don't really love him hosting shows and stuff. No. But
I'm just saying that's where that's coming from. So it will be see how they streamline the show. What's interesting now, which I think is also a reaction to the marketplace and a reaction to those who have said, okay, how do we gain, you know, grow our own brand. This year it will still be late in February, but then in 2020 it will be earlier in the year. You know, usually the Academy Awards are the last award, and so the Golden Globes and the SAGs and all those other ones, by the time the Academy Awards come, it's almost a given as to what's going to win, and there really is no excitement. So they are saying, okay, we are not going to be the last one anymore. We're going to be right in the hunt. We're not just going to be the old last one just to be there as kind of an obligatory thing. We're going to be right into the hunt.
Yeah, well, it's a weird one, you know, because it used to be that all the other, like there were ceremonies that would sort of, it was like a building, like they would build momentum right up into the Oscars. But you're right. I mean, at this point, there are too many televised award shows because it used to just be like the Golden Globes and then the Oscars, you know, that really people paid attention to and they were televised. Then they started televising the SAG Awards.
And
now
the Director Awards.
Yeah. And so now there's so many televised award shows. I guess that makes sense. I see the strategy there.
Oh, yeah. No.
But it does feel a little bit weird. So what is going to air? I mean, is it like if the Oscars air before, let's say, the SAG Awards? I mean, who's going to watch the SAG Awards?
Well, and the Oscars and the Oscars say, I don't care. Because
right,
we
sure.
created this whole thing.
Right.
And these guys were kind of like barnacles.
Right.
And they saw the openings. As I said many times, you know, the Golden Globes for a good 20 or 30 years were kind of a joke. They weren't even on network television. They were on cable. And before that, sometimes they weren't even televised in the 70s and 80s. And if they were, they were on UHF stations like Channel 44, Channel 32. They were just there as a, well, we'll throw it on. And now that has grown in, obviously, in its, you know, its prominence. So that's usually in January. So now I think within a month, I think they said it's going to be like February 9th or something.
Yeah, early February, I thought I saw.
So that will, so to your point, once again, interesting to see. So what happens?
But I think you're right. I think that actually could help them because it is true. Again, even for someone like me or someone like you who we love the Oscars. It's like, you know, it's like our Super Bowl. Or I'll speak for myself. I know you probably like watching the Super Bowl too.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, it is a little anticlimactic at this point. After there have been so many televised award shows, you're like, meh, by the time the Oscars roll. So maybe this will, I can see how this could help boost the appeal.
Like you said, I mean, the difference was that there used to be a buildup. And still, the Oscars were considered the grand prize. But now, all those other little smaller awards, they're acting like theirs is the most important. They're kind of throwing dust on the Oscars. Like, who cares about you guys?
Yeah.
And I think that was another thing. There used to be, even within the industry, there was kind of a respect for the Oscars. And it still is the grand dam of all.
Oh, yeah.
But in terms of these award shows and these other entities that are putting them on, if you watch the SAG Awards, you'd think that they are the Oscars, the way they purport themselves there.
Well, but also, like, I mean, so it's all about how they spin it, too, because then they also have, you know, every actor. Let's take the SAG Awards, for example. Every actor.
And we should say that's the Screen Actors Guild, which is like
Screen Actors Guild Award. That's where actors. Yes, they are giving other actors awards. And that is so that the spin on that, and every actor who wins one gets up and says, you know, awards are really great, but to be recognized by my own peers, you know, because of course the Academy Awards is made up of people who work in all facets of the industry. You know, it's actors and directors and, you know, cinematographers and like everyone who's involved in the movie making process. And so then that's the particular spin that, you know, you can see it, that they put on an award show like that. So they all have their own angle that they're pushing.
Yeah. So so that will be interesting to see now. Once again, that's another clear move made at making this more appealing to an audience. So I nobody's coming out and say it. There certainly have been, stories written about it. But I think there's no question that after last year's, and we've seen a steady decline both in the ratings as well as just the overall buzz about the Oscars and all the different problems they've had with the goofy, as I said earlier, with the wrong envelopes and the length of the shows and just the unevenness, ABC has said, okay, if this is going to be a continuing entity here, we have to make some changes because the audiences are not tuning in as much as we like to think that it is this amazing event that everybody can't wait for. Clearly, the numbers are showing that it isn't, and we have to just deal with that reality. So I think those first two were definitely driven by ABC saying to the Academy Board, look, gang, you got to do something. But the final one is the one that I think is probably the most controversial and the most distressing if you're a movie fan, if you are a purist. And I think it was driven by ABC and the need for attracting bigger audiences or creating a bigger buzz. I am shocked that I think the Academy Awards have really hurt their overall prestige, and they've really diluted the importance by creating a new category, the best. I don't even know if this makes sense. Is it the best popular film?
It's outstanding popular film, I think.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
What does that
mean? I don't know.
I
mean, it makes me wonder what's the criteria?
Yeah,
do you have to have a certain box office? Maybe you have to have.
I mean, what does that mean? How do you give this award away? Is it purely money? No, it's not there.
There's outstanding. This is what it says. Well, Wikipedia tells me outstanding achievement in popular film. Okay, that's the actual name of the award.
But they haven't given a criteria yet. It's not there.
Yeah, I'm not seeing any.
No.
Okay, it says eligibility requirements and other key details will be forthcoming.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
So I mean, look. This is, once again, this has been a creature that started in a Petri dish. This is the Jurassic Park, okay? This is Jurassic Park come to life. Because for the last 20 years, if not more, ever since Entertainment Tonight became a TV show, and I don't even, were you around when it started, Entertainment Tonight? Do you remember that?
Oh, I'm sure I probably was. I mean, I'm guessing, when do you think it started? Like in the 80s?
Probably I don't know if it was late 70s or early 80s.
Really? I don't know if it was really, I mean, I remember, was that back in the day of like, was that John Tesh and like Mary Hart?
Oh, yeah.
Entertainment Tonight? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I definitely remember those
and
days.
And that was even before then. But my point is, suddenly to create, to fill some time, and to play into, we're entertainment, For many years, Variety and The Hollywood Reporter, they're two trade magazines, and they would be listing what the grosses were, you know, on a weekend for movies.
Yeah.
And it was no big deal. It was this small, I used to read Variety for many years. It was in the corner somewhere. It was like a box score, you know, from a baseball game. It was no big deal.
Right.
But then, when those entertainment-oriented shows started to pop up, like Entertainment Tonight, and then after that, you know, Access Hollywood and all those other things. But Entertainment Tonight was one of the first ones that went national, and it started to get popular. And I'm sure that I think initially they may have used it as just kind of a little bumper segue before a commercial, just as a graphic. No big deal. Because who cared how much a movie made?
Right.
But when that became, suddenly they started to talk about it. Now it wasn't just a graphic. It was, oh, this week, number one. And then when the movie started to cost more and make more, it became big news. And suddenly it went from this insignificant, really insider kind of a stat to now that's the lead. If you watch the Sunday night news, the regular news, not an entertainment show, but the regular newscast, they announced that on
really?
The news, on Sunday Night News. Oh, the number one movie this weekend. What?
Right.
Why are you telling me this? But that's the way that has completely grown from something that was insignificant into a dinosaur now.
They're doing this. But I thought the whole point. So, okay. Seems as if they're doing this because I know that in the last few years, there's been some criticism of the Oscars, which is that, well, no wonder the ratings are going down. Nobody even recognizes these movies that are nominated, you know, because they're movies that people aren't necessarily going out to see in large numbers. They're not exactly big, you know, box office successes. But I'm okay with that, you know, because really quality films don't always necessarily appeal to the masses. But isn't that why they expanded the best?
Exactly.
Picture category exactly.
About
in the first
10,
place?
10 years or so ago, The Dark Knight, I don't know if it was The Dark Knight, The Dark Knight Returns was the second Batman movie.
It was The Dark Knight.
The Dark Knight Returns was the third one. The Dark Knight, everybody was saying aside from just being a superhero movie, this was a really good movie and it deserved to be among the Academy Award nominees. And there was only five and it was not. And so they said next year, you know, this is there's becoming a discrepancy between, you know, what movies, you know, people consider, you know, popcorn movies, but there's some good ones, and what are considered, you know, just quality films. So they expanded that to 10 to allow those to come in. And the funny thing is that when they expanded those to 10, those Dark Knight superhero movies were still being left out.
Right.
Because then it just gave the other people that were still voting for the quality movies a chance to nominate some movies that were really under the radar that they felt were good.
Right.
So they just went the opposite direction. They figured by expanding that they would get these popcorn movies and these big superhero movies in there. But all the Academy Award people said was like, oh, okay, wait a minute. We love Bird. You know?
Well, okay, and here's my other question. So now, with the new Outstanding Achievement and Popular Film category, does that mean that Best Picture goes back to a five-horse race?
I know. See, and that
I think it should.
I think it definitely should. You're right. I believe that. But my point is, so now clearly, to get to my point about the box office stuff, so now clearly does this popular, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. So does this popular movie category, does that mean that a movie that qualifies for that, it has to make over $100 million?
I would guess there's going to have to be some type of.
But clearly,
how else do you?
It's all based on box office now. Nothing to do with quality.
Right. If you don't have any, like, quantitative criteria for that, it's totally subjective. How do you decide what's popular and what's not?
And my point, and I had said this when we had this first discussion back in March or February, of the biggest problem that the Academy is facing, and I don't know if this, I mean, this is certainly a reaction to it. I don't know if it's the best answer, but I was saying that clearly what's going on here, especially with the last winner, what was it, the Shape of Water?
Oh, the Shape of Water, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, no one saw that. Seven people saw that movie.
Oh, my parents watched it.
I'm just saying.
Nobody. I don't even think they saw it in the theater, though.
Yeah, so that, exactly. But my point is, this year or last year's Academy Award, based on the 2017 movies, was a very obvious and clear example of the kind of dual personality of the movie world now, is that you've got movies that are clearly made for 12 and 14-year-old kids, or 20-year-old kids, because sadly 20-year-olds are on a 14-year-old, you know, maturity level. But you've got are superhero movies, CGI movies, and animated movies. And those are the ones that make all the money. And then you've got these other smaller movies now, sadly, which are hardly on any screens. Some of them are independent, some are major studios with some major stars, but they don't get half the excitement, half the buzz, and they certainly don't make anywhere close to $100 million. Some of them do if they catch some fire.
No, well, and also that's the thing. It's kind of chicken and egg, because some of those films, actually, it's only when they're nominated for an Oscar or they win an Oscar that sometimes they get like re-released and then more people go see them, and they kind of need that.
Yeah, so the dichotomy here for once again, let's get back to your original premise here, is that this is an entertainment show. I'm sure ABC said to the Oscars, look, gang, I understand that you are trying to be, you know, have integrity, and you are trying to, you know, award the movies that are the best in terms of quality and importance and social relevance and whatever you want to talk about. But the problem is that your audience, your movie industry audience, is not going to see those movies. And if you've got 10 movies now that are nominated that nobody cares about or has seen, and meanwhile, 20-year-olds, 12-year-olds, 30-year-olds, to some, you could even say, just say, are going, wait a minute, where's Iron Man? Where's Guardians of the Galaxy? Where's Lego Movie? All these animated movies, all these superhero
movies. Well, the animated movies do have their own category.
I understand that, but my point is the best, they're not in the best picture category. Don't forget.
Right.
This most popular film, I guarantee you that this most popular film category is going to be placed right before best picture.
I'm sure.
I mean, best animated film is given out at 7:30 in the evening. You know, but this is going to be there to be separate but equal.
Right.
You know, and so this is going to be just as big, and it's really going to take away, I think, from the best picture. It's going to dilute the fact now of what is the best picture, because now here's my question. As we talked about the criteria, so now what if the most popular film is the best film? Is it going to be nominated in both categories? Is it going to win both?
Right. Okay, that's a good question. I mean,
don't forget, Jaws did not win Best Picture. I mean, you know, Star Wars, no Star Wars movie, you know, are, I don't even know if any Star Wars movie's ever been, even nominated for Best Picture, per se. So there's all these franchise kind of movies. There's all these, you know, I mean, they're certainly making a case for the Black Panther film that came out earlier this year.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like some people think that Black Panther was actually
the best picture.
Like that it was like the catalyst for the Academy creating this specific category.
Well, and don't forget, there's also some ulterior motives there, because not only is that a superhero movie that made a ton of money, but it's also a black-oriented superhero movie. And don't forget about the problems and the troubles that the Oscars were in several years ago, or a couple years ago, with no black nominees.
Right.
And so,
well, it's also a culturally significant film, you know, so.
Oh, no, I understand that, but I'm just saying is that there's a lot of things going on here, but yes, I just think like that they've really diluted by having this most popular, they have, it's become, it, now the Oscars are almost going to become the People's Choice Awards. And I really do believe, sadly, that the Best Picture Award is now going to take second, even though it's going to be still the, in theory, the most important Oscar. The most popular film Oscar is going to wind up being the one that gets a bigger headline and more excitement about it because, once again, you know, that's the movie that most people will have seen and will be rooting in that category against these other ones that nobody has seen.
But I also think it's, I mean, it's weird in a sense too. I mean, look, maybe they just, I don't know that they needed to create a new category, because the thing is, it's not that a major blockbuster has never been nominated for Best Picture. There have been some that have been nominated and won. I mean, do you remember Titanic? Well, that was biggest grossing film of all time up to that point. And that won the Oscar. Again, I mean, Lord of the Rings, didn't one of the Lord of the Rings movies win?
I just think that right now, the networks are, once again, you cannot discount the fact that the networks are in a major problem here of keeping people tuned to the networks. There are so many other options, and they've been there for the last couple of years, but now you are seeing a Netflix is more aggressive than ever. Amazon Prime, Hulu, CBS, Paramount, they're all having these streaming services. Cable has always been there, you know, and so the networks are losing, you know, market share and viewers every year, every month. And I think they are just saying, you know what, look, gang, if you can't put on an entertaining show, and like I said, it, you have to look at it, sadly, as a show now. I just think that, you know, it dilutes the importance. It shows a acquiescence to the mainstream. But it was definitely done to appeal to those, because there's people going, hey, why am I going to watch the Academy Awards? I don't know any of the movies.
Right.
But all I know is the movies that I liked, all my superhero movies, you guys don't like it. So if you don't like that, then I don't like you, and I'm not watching.
And it is really hard to care who's going to win if you haven't seen any
of
the
there's
movies.
No horse race.
I get that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. So I don't know if the Academy Awards listened to the podcast, but they certainly did. make some sweeping changes that certainly spoke to some of the points that we discussed back in February after the last Academy Awards, or March. So we shall see. I'm interested to see what's going to happen and, how they're going to change this. And I'm looking forward to being able to stay up and see the whole Academy Awards. So that'll be fun.
Yeah.
But I am not.
You're not gonna fall asleep in your bowl of popcorn this year.
But I'm gonna be very, very disappointed when the most popular film award is given out and people stand up. They're gonna do something. I guarantee you, they're gonna do something that they're gonna show people all at home jumping up and down in their living rooms.
Oh boy!
I think it's gonna be. Sadly, the Academy Award, the red carpet really. To me, sort of, diluted the whole Academy Award thing because it made it all flash. And now this is the last capitulation. I don't know what more could be done.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see.
The only thing could be worse is if there's some YouTube star that hosts it next year.
Oh, don't even say it.
Well, Emily, always fun as usual. Thank you for entering the Pop Culture Club, and we will talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks, Jim.
Take it easy. And so, that ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Thanks for tuning in. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, the only podcast from the end of the web to your screen.